Menards is your one-stop shop for all your summer essentials. Whether you're stocking up on everyone's favorite snacks, making a patio perfect for entertaining family and friends, or getting ready to gather around the grill, Menards has everything you need for your get-togethers all summer long. Save big money now at Menards. Plus, don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. The Killer Bees!
We are back, baby.
AFC South champions.
We are back.
Doesn't matter, Brian.
Classic.
We are back. That's we are back.
This is just the beginning. This is the first goal. This is just the beginning.
Stroud, wide open for the touchdown, is the fullback, Andrew Beck. Carry by Singletary for the touchdown.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present the Killer Bees. 5%
pleasure, 50% pain. What a bake down. Hey, how we doing?
He's blank on Branham. It's Brian McDonald behind the glass. A Monday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. What happened there? What went wrong?
I don't know. You potted me up. I thought that was the introduction. But
I thought that was the introduction, too.
I don't know.
Look at us. Texans outperforming us.
Yeah, no
doubt.
That's
for sure. Texans doing a better job than whatever we're doing. But the Houston Texans winning a football game on Saturday. How about that? They go into Indy. Must-win game. I'd kind of reserved my expectations a little bit. It's like, hey, they win this game. Awesome. Like, it's all house's money from here on out. I even kind of had, like, I was tempering my expectations. If they lose the game, well, they've had a great first year under DeMeco. Like, you go 9-8 from where you came from, the year that C.J. Stroud had. Like, you are still bullish on the future. You're still super excited about the future. But you jump out to a 14-3 lead. I didn't love that they gave up that last field goal. But 14-6 at the half, the Colts storm back, only for you to kind of take and absorb that punch. You punch back. You come away with a victory on the road in a must-win game. And we learn that C.J. Stroud really is that big game player that you're hoping he would be.
He really is. I mean, he's checked all the boxes. He checked another one there with that game. That's a stadium that they haven't had a lot of luck with a team that they haven't had a lot of success against. And he just threw it all on the wayside and said, that was then, this is now, and let me show you how to get victories. And he guided his team. He didn't make mistakes. He made the big plays. Right off the jump, they sent the message and responded after the field goal drive. And you were like, okay, this is different, man. It just felt different. It felt like that they were in control, and you felt a lot more confident from the coaching staff to the players. And it's really hard to believe that it's a first-year head coach, a rookie quarterback, and that they just seem like they have more poise and are in more control of the situation than a lot of times you've seen Texans teams in the past.
Did you see that accolade, I guess, where it was, this is the first rookie quarterback and the first year head coach to make the playoffs in NFL history? Like, I'm wondering if that is accurate because I can't remember where I saw it. But that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, for the first time in history, like in the history of the NFL, the first time that it has ever happened where you've had a rookie head coach and a first year, or, you know, a rookie quarterback go to the playoffs. Like, that's unheard of. It's never been done before. Yet, here we are in Houston, and it's been accomplished by DeMeco Ryans and C.J. Stroud. It also kind of points to that, well, I told you so. Well, it's first time in NFL history. Congratulations, you got that one right. But it's an unbelievable story. I was doing a podcast yesterday with a couple of guys, and it's crazy. Like, I don't believe it. Like, I really don't believe this year. Like, what you've had to endure as Texans fans, what you've had to endure doing Houston Sports Talk every day since 2019. Like, it is hard to believe that a first-year head coach, a rookie quarterback, win 10 games, you're AFC South champions, you got a little help from your old buddies, Amy Adams, and you've won the division. Like, it feels surreal right now.
It really does. And I don't think in a lot of ways, because we are so connected to it and dialed into it and play-by-play every single day, you know, kind of entrenched in what they've done, to take the step back and say, this might be the greatest rookie season for a quarterback that the league has ever seen. When you talk about the accomplishments, he's not done yet, but the things that he continues to do and what magnitude it's had on the entire franchise, and how two guys have almost individually, single-handedly done their job enough to turn the entire franchise around in this short of a period of time. and now have so many people so optimistic and excited about this team again. It's amazing what he's been able to do. The throws that he's continually able to make. The throw off the back foot that looked like he was throwing it away that ended up with the big completion to Nico was just next level. That's the kind of stuff when we start talking about tiers and comparisons. Tell me how many other guys in the league, are going to make that kind of throw with that poise?
Not many.
No.
It's a short list, like Lamar, Josh Allen.
Mahomes could do it.
But a couple of those guys, too, I think are capable of doing it, but they're also going to throw three interceptions in one game. So it's like C.J. Stroud couples that, like the dynamic, the highlight reel play, the unthinkable, while also taking care of the football, making the right reads, throwing checkdowns. Like, he's a rookie, and he's got a long way to go, but there's the feeling that he is that complete package. Because he can make the highlight play, but he can also be Brock Purdy and be super careful and not turn the football over.
Yeah, he just knows how to take care of the football, which is so rare in a young guy that's normally a gunslinger when they come into the league, or they just don't know what they don't know, and they you know, misread coverages or throw the ball where they don't think anybody is and then realize a linebacker was floating or something like that. But the other stat that I saw was, like, in the history of the game, rookies or not, there was only three quarterbacks in the history of the league to lead them in yards, average yards per game, and touchdown to interception ratio for a full season. And he, along with Joe Montana and one other, he did it this year as a rookie.
Yeah, he's not as advertised because he's better than advertised. And again, it feels surreal. My biggest takeaway from this was more like, because Stroud was great. Like, Stroud did the, is he going to be big game Stroud in the NFL? And after one, you know, winner in game, he has proven that he is. I called that little spin around pass, throw off the back foot fadeaway the new dream shake, because he's kind of spinning around there and throwing off the back foot like the fadeaway jumper. I don't know if it really works, but maybe I like pulling a little bit of the old school
nostalgic
when it comes to
history.
A little bit to the nostalgia of Houston, because it kind of looked dream shaky to me. My biggest takeaway, though, was actually DeMeco, and to me, that game was a microcosm of what the entire year has been, where he has changed the culture of this organization. That was a culture win. Like, you look at what they had offensively. Dameon Pierce didn't play a single snap in that football game on offense. He played some special teams. Mm-hmm. He didn't get one offensive snap the entire game, which is like, okay, you're without who you think would be your best running back when you started the year. Now, Devin Singletary was good. Now, we know the offensive line has been through all sorts of trouble all year long. It's been a patchwork offensive line really the entire season. You have not played what would be your optimal offensive line one time this year, because your optimal offensive line has Titus Howard at right tackle. That never happened. The Houston Texans did not play their best offensive line a single game all year. Xavier Hutchinson and John Metchie played over 50% of the snaps and won a must-win game. That seems baffling to me. So patchwork offensively. Look what you had on the defensive side. Your best pass rusher and John Gernard, or your sack leader and John Gernard, did not play. Didn't play in that game. Will Anderson, who's a really good player, one of the better defensive ends in the NFL, he played less than 50% of the snaps in that game. Your defensive tackles were banged up. You're on like your fifth safety with DeAndre Houston Carson. Kareem Jackson, you picked up in waivers a couple of weeks ago, is playing like 30% of the snaps. Barnett, who was also a waiver wire pickup, is contributing and playing at a pretty high level. So you have a patchwork offensive line. You have a patchwork defense. It's a must-win game. It's on the road. Like, everything's working against you. And you win a tough, gutted out, grimy game. That's DeMeco Ryan. That's a culture win for the Houston Texans.
Let's go back. Keep going and take it a step further to the conversation you and I had going into the weekend. And that was, what's the key to stopping the Colts? What's the thing you got a key on to really kind of make sure you can control the Colts and you can be in charge of this game? Stop the running game. Stop Jonathan Taylor. They weren't able to stop Jonathan Taylor. He was running absolutely wild. You only had 60 yards rushing for the game. And yet you seemed like you were in control the entire way. It was like, that was the amazing thing to me, too, on top of everything that you said, was the fact that, look, the key to stopping Indy is stop the run game. And they struggled all game long stopping the run game, yet you never felt like the game was out of reach or they weren't in control and right where they needed to be throughout the game.
They weren't really good at stopping the run in that gun. They were pretty poor. I mean, it's the first time all year they've given up over 220 yards. I think it ended right around 220 yards. Their previous high was the Colts in week two, and they had like 128 yards in that game.
Well, and every time Taylor stepped out and Moss stepped in, they didn't miss a beat. They were still pounding the rock, and they were getting 5-6 yards a chunk. And you're going, wow, how is this happening to a team that stops the run so well all season long?
227 is what it ended up at. Their previous high also to the Colts was 126. They gave up over 100 more yards on the ground than their previous high. Yet they found a way to win.
I don't know if you guys remember this point in the game, but there was a point in the game where a Colts player went down. I believe it was late third quarter, fourth quarter, and they had an injury timeout. And up until that point, like you said, the Colts were running wild, ripping off. At one point, they were averaging over 9 yards a carry. And as soon as the Texans were able to regroup after that injury timeout, everything changed. Suddenly, the runs that had been 8-9 yards were 1 and 2, and they completely took control of the run game again. I'm not sure what happened in that coaching moment that DeMeco had during the injury timeout, but it was amazing how quickly and how sharply everything turned for them in run defense.
Yeah, the national guys were even talking about it, too. Like, you couldn't have planned something like that because, obviously, injuries happen. But it happened at the absolute right time, and it seemed like that was a complete momentum buster for the Colts, who seemed to have finally gotten it rolling. And then lo and behold, they come in and they, you know, put their foot down and they do what they need to do. And then they just basically show you who's boss and they take control with the offense again.
And I think that paid dividends. And on the play that ends up being the incomplete pass that wins the Texans the game, everyone obviously criticizing the Colts for not having Jonathan Taylor on the field. I think that might have played the part in the decision-making for Shane Steichen. One, the play call would have worked if Minshew put an accurate pass on the target. But I wonder if specifically not having Jonathan Taylor in the game and not running the ball was because Shane Steichen had seen the shift in that, well, they've adjusted and now they're stopping the run.
Yeah, potentially. I also didn't think Taylor was as good once he came back from the injury. Yeah. I thought he looked pretty slow. I thought he looked pretty choppy. Yeah,
they were really, all of a sudden, suddenly the holes were closed and it seemed like they bottled him up right at the line of initial contact for several carries. But to Brian's point, Steichen said after the game, I liked the personnel they had on the field to set it up for the play. It was the right play call. There's
worked.
No doubt
they
about it.
They would have scored a touchdown. If Minshew puts that pass out in front and set it behind, they score a touchdown.
The Texans had two guys there where the Colts had one blocker. I don't know if they score on it.
I don't think they score.
I thought the formation, though, the Texans weren't really aligned to stop that sort of swing pass.
Let's watch the replay. I'll bet you a Coke on that. But it doesn't matter. Like, it would have easily gotten the first down.
Yeah, I think definitely they get the first down.
Easily definitely been a big down. Play. Like, I saw Steichen getting criticized, and I was like, why? I saw J.J. Watt criticizing him for not having Taylor on the field. Taylor was hurt. Like, Taylor was banged up. He didn't look the same. He didn't look explosive like he did before the injury. And it's there. Like, if you're going to question play calling based on the result, you should not be questioning play calling. Like, is it there or is it not there? If it's there, it's a good play call. If it's not there, it's a poor play call. And like Brian said, if it's a decent throw,
no doubt,
it's an easy first down. I also thought it could have been caught despite it being a bad throw. Steichen would have been the third person. Steichen would have been the third person that I blamed on that play. The first person I'm blaming on that play is Minshew. Mm-hmm. The second person I'm blaming on that game is the running back. The third person is Steichen. But I'm not blaming Steichen because it was a great play call.
It was a great play call. And the one thing that I noticed was, as bad of a throw as it was, if you were expecting him to try and take it to the house, the fact of the matter is, even though it twisted and was on his back shoulder and he had to turn a little bit, you can still catch that, land on the seat of your pants, and get the first down. So it was rightful. It's rightful and rightfully so that both guys should take blame for that play because both equally had blame in the play. But I'm not blaming Steichen at all because he had everybody fooled, and that play would have worked if you just had the right execution.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. All right, busy show. We're going to be off a little bit early today at 5:30 because we're carrying the national championship game. So we're going to fit 3 hours of radio into 2.5. So action-packed, Texans-heavy, making the playoffs for the first time since 2019. We're going to have a Texans-centric mailbag with the Killer Bees a little bit later on. We do have to hand out some game balls from around the NFL as well. Who deserves some game balls after the great performances over the weekend? 713-780 888-760-3776, the HRMP listener line. We're on the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN975 and ESPN925.
Guys, another big game tonight. Jeremy just talked about it, the national championship game. We had a big weekend of football and so much more on the horizon. If you're having a watch party at your house or you just want the ultimate viewing experience, yeah, it's about the TV and the couch and the company, but it's also about what you offer to eat and what you have to consume, and I recommend some Daisy Dips. Because when I was growing up, my mom used to make that French onion dip from scratch, and she would work hard to make sure the mix was right, the soup mix was the right spices, the sour cream and the balance was all there. You don't have to worry about any of that anymore. Just get to your local grocer, and you can get Daisy Dips right there available for you, and they're just ready to go with your favorite chips. You can get French onion, you can get creamy ranch, you can use them with your vegetable platter if you're in those resolution stages still. If you just want to take your favorite chip or maybe some wings, you've got the ultimate dip experience waiting for you just by grabbing out and getting it at your grocery store. You get there, they did all the work, you get all the pleasure, just get to your grocery store and get either that ranch or get that French onion, and you are going to love those big games a little bit more because the eating is going to be as good as the games. So check them out today, get to your grocery store and get some of those Daisy Dips.
ESPN 97.5 on YouTube. Dog Show.
Women bathing their dogs, you know, in cut-off jeans and T-shirts and with the soap. And you know how it gets all wet and in the water.
All teams covered. No stalking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
CJ Stroud and los Texans están en los playoffs.
I love that guy. Free tamales for everybody, I think. I don't know. It's hard for me to understand. CJ Stroud, did you see that interview? He was doing an interview, I think it was ESPN Deportes, after the game, which is always fascinating to me. Like, you're interviewing this English speaker. I don't know if there's a translator or not. And the guy had him cutting. I've never seen this type of cake before. It looked like a king cake to me. Mm-hmm. You know how when you cut up the king cake that you find the baby? And if you find the baby, you have forever good luck the rest of the year. Well, apparently, if you cut the baby, there's like free tamales on a specific day. I'm not aware of this tradition. Maybe that's a lack of
cut the baby, like cut into it when you find it?
No, I don't mean cut the baby. I mean you cut the cake, then the baby's in the piece of cake. Oh, okay. But I don't know. Like, it seems like they're giving away free tamales, but I'm not sure if there's free tamales. But I would love if there is free tamales. But the way the guy says his name is just so awesome.
CJ Stroud and los Texans están en los playoffs.
I love that guy. I love that. Like, that guy could be my hype man forever. I hope we hear that 100 times this week. CJ Stroud and los Texans.
There was a girl anchoring the morning weekend show on 13 that called him CJ Stroud. Like, if there's very few names in this city that are less that get this kind of hype that he's gotten over the season in the last couple of weeks. I don't know how you mispronounce that one. And you don't have a producer that goes, maybe not.
Rosca cake is what it's called. And it's a Three Kings cake. So I'm sure it's very similar to the king cake. I wasn't familiar with this tradition, which is probably a poor job of half of me. My Mexican half. Pretty poor job there. But appreciate that week, Strong.
Los Texans.
I love that guy. That guy's
in the playoffs,
awesome.
Yeah.
In the playoffs. He also says, I want to take a second to say go Texan. 713-780-ESPN. 0697 says, whoever has the baby in their cake has to bring the tamales for the family.
I heard something like that. Like, whoever gets the baby has to host the party the next year, too.
It's probably something like that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, tamales are a lot of work. So I wonder if CJ Stroud knows that he has to pick up the dime to give everybody in Houston free tamales. I hope so, and I hope he gets
just like
from
the rookie hazing dinner
garage.
from the veterans.
He deserves. Yeah, he needs to pay up the city with a bunch of tamales.
Every time you see those bills on the internet, they are extraordinary.
4187. The next few days are not going to be good for me. Recycle radio. I don't really know what that means.
I don't think
we'll be recycling a whole lot of radio, but appreciate the concern. Ocho brings up a point here that just. It kills that information that we saw on the internet that D'Amico Ryans, first year head coach, CJ Stroud, rookie quarterback, the first duo to make the playoffs. Chuck Pagano and Andrew Luck did it in 2012.
Oh, there you go.
So that was misinformation. We've been lied to. Don't believe everything
we
didn't read
bite.
On the internet.
We said we have to check it.
Yeah, I didn't check it until now, and I checked it during the break, and Ocho was right. Thank you, Ocho.
Yep, thanks.
3167, it's not just the tamales. It's depending on how many babies you pull. It depends on what meals you make. Yeah, I was not familiar with this. I need to be a little bit more
It's a little
familiar.
Bit more elaborate than I thought.
It's super elaborate, but I like it. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Is Lawrence ready, Brian? Now we'll get to Lawrence in a second. How far the Houston Texans have come in 12 months is something that I want to talk about. Because you look back at what's went on in this organization. You talk about the firing of the head coaches. You talk about the ownership. We were asking each other, you know, a year ago at minimum that, you know, is Kyle McNair the worst owner in the NFL? Mm-hmm. Nick Caserio should be on the hot seat. Blah, 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 blah. Now you've went from all of that negative stuff to now like, oh, cool cat Kyle McNair. Oh, Nick Caserio, executive of the year. D'Amico Ryans could win coach of the year. Maybe you have the offensive rookie of the year and the defensive rookie of the year. The turnaround, I thought about Brendan Riley today because Brendan would always sit there and tell us, like, rebuild should not take this long in the NFL. Well, you know, stop talking, Brendan Riley. Just sit there behind the glass, let the big boys do some big boy radio.
Okay. Stupid.
But he was right. He was right. Like, rebuilds do not take that long if you hit. And that's the important thing. You have to hit. But the Texans hit on their two most critical positions, and you might even say third, with D'Amico. They hit on Stroud, gave up a lot. But they hit on Will Anderson.
They did. And when you look at it, too, obviously Brennan's speaking from a position of weakness because the Lions found every way to do everything wrong along the way, and that was the built-in tape delay for why it took so long for Detroit to kind of reap the benefits of what they're going through this year. But when you look at it from a Texans perspective, look, I'll be the first to admit it. I thought they were going to win four games. I just didn't think the roster was there yet. You look at it now and you go, the fact that you got the right guys is so important. It doesn't matter how you go about it and the way that that it fell into place. You got the right guys. You got the right quarterback. You got the right coach. I questioned the trade on draft day like you did. I looked at it and said, yeah, we were both very clear and say, look, we're not going to be able to fully judge this for a couple of years. But right off the bat, part of the reason why I was so critical of the trade was because I was expecting the Texans to have a top five pick. When you look at what they were able to do this year, when you look at what the roster construction was and now where it is at this point with what Caserio's done in season, with the way they've been able to kind of adjust on the fly when injuries happen, and the fact that you're sitting at a team that's looking at their first playoff game going, my goodness, what an accomplishment. That's why I feel like D'Amico's accomplishment is, to me, head and shoulders above everybody else from a coaching perspective, and CJ from a rookie of the year offensive player, a rookie offensive player's position, because of the fact that they came from the depths of the dead. The turnaround was seven games. That just doesn't happen. Yeah, you can have turnarounds happen in a couple of years. The fact that you had it happen the first year these two guys were in their jobs with the Texans is amazing.
The stat, by the way, is first rookie quarterback, first year head coach to win the division, not make the playoffs, because Pagano and Luck finished second. They went 11-5. Guess who won the division in 2012? The 12-4 Houston Texans. So the first quarterback, first rookie quarterback, first year head coach that win the division in NFL history. So I knew the accolade was there. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Lawrence, you're in the Hive with the Bees. What's up?
What's going on?
Go, oh, man. Let's go.
Yeah, I'm thinking about Stefanski. You know, that division is so much more difficult. You got the Steelers, you got the Bengals, and of course you got two games against the Ravens. The Texans get two games against Tennessee. Obviously Jacksonville fell apart. And then, you know, Indianapolis is kind of middle to best at good. And Stefanski had a better record in a more difficult division without Chubb and without Deshaun Watson.
Okay. All right. Okay, Lawrence, that's fine. But at the same time, I just talked about the seven-game turnaround, about the fact that you basically started the season with a Super Bowl-caliber roster, and it was your mistake, not ours, that you decided to trade for Deshaun Watson and then give him the massive extension. But I'm not taking anything away from Stefanski. He's done a hell of a job. And the fact that they found the fountain of youth for Joe Flacco, and they adjusted on the fly to get where they were needing to go. But to take a team that was as bad as Houston last year, which Cleveland wasn't, to turn it around the way they did, and this is just, like Jeremy was just saying, the first-year quarterback, the first-year head coach, he's been in the league a long time. He's been in Cleveland for several years. You're not talking about apples to apples there. That's why, granted, Stefanski could very well win it, but to me, what D'Amico's done is more amazing to me and more worthy of it.
Stefanski would have my vote.
That's fair.
Appreciate the call, Lawrence. Stefanski would have my vote. And we'll dive into this in great detail a little bit later. Like, how much of it should be based on previous year's teams? How much of it should be based on what you've went through in this single season? I think it's vague. I think there's different ways to look at it. They pulled Joe Flacco off the couch.
Sure.
Like, who has the better quarterback? I think DeMeco has the better quarterback.
Yep.
The Browns lost their best offensive player, Nick Chubb, not Deshaun Watson. Now, they had a great defense, all of that.
And they still have Amari Cooper and Njoku.
He's got Joe Flacco throwing for over 300 yards. Like, that's worthy of Coach of the Year. He would have my vote. That's not to take away from DeMeco. DeMeco would be second on my list. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to Dave on the HRMP listener line. Dave, you're in the Hive of the Bees. What's up, Dave?
Hey, you guys, I was listening. You talk about who deserves the credit for this amazing turnaround. And obviously, Nick deserves a lot. But what about Hannah? You know, you hear these rumors that Hannah had a lot to do with getting rid of Easterby, that Hannah had a lot to do with hiring DeMeco, that Hannah even had a lot to do with the selection of Stroud. Is that all rumor, or do you guys hear anything like that? Because I say give her the award.
I appreciate the call, Dave. Look, I think
all of our callers are in tornadoes.
Sounds like it because the weather is bad. But I think when you look at this, there's nothing wrong with getting a group answer here. It's different than saying who's the executive of the year. But if you want to give the credit, it's not Brady versus Belichick. It's like one guy's ego not allowing the other guy to get equal credit. This is where Hannah gets some piece of the pie. Nick gets a piece of the pie. DeMeco gets a piece of the pie. CJ and the team get a piece of the pie. But the fact is, you should not hold back in terms of how many people you want to give credit to, because it literally is amazing the turnaround and the speed with which they were able to turn it around. And Hannah gets some of that because she straightened out the ship with Cal. She kept him out of his own way. If she did some of the things that I also had heard that she was getting involved with internally with the organization, and it's not the football personnel stuff, it's more just the imaging of Cal and the overall imaging of the franchise and the way they handled their day-to-day differently, it all helped because this went from a bleep show that everybody looked at as the laughingstock of the NFL to a playoff team that a lot of people look at now as a team that is doing it the right way.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know how much involvement Hannah had. I don't know who was the decision maker of getting rid of Easterby. I don't know who pulled the biggest, had the biggest swing in terms of hiring DeMeco. I tend to believe that they stayed out of drafting.
I don't
believe in the McNairs drafted CJ Stroud at number two. If you go and listen to the Bobby Slowick whenever he was on the Adam Schefter podcast, like Bobby Slowick was talking about like how intricate the process was with Stroud coming in and how much he blew away the coaching staff and blew away the front office and the entire organization. I personally don't believe ownership made the pick at number two. I don't know if Cal is making decisions, if Hannah's making decisions. I think we kind of lean to Hannah because when Cal talks, you don't sound too smart. So I think that's why everybody kind of gravitates to it. This is Hannah. Now, how they've rebranded Cal has been unbelievable. Like, he's leaned into this whole, goofy character with a handlebar mustache that watches a 40-inch television from 100 feet away at 3:30 in the morning. But they've done well in the marketing of it. 713-780-3776. Speaking of the marketing of it, let's go back out to the HRMP listener line. Brett, you're in the Hive of the Bees. What's up, Brett?
Hey, guys. I don't know if it's because the Texans were playing on ESPN for the very first time this season, but whenever they scored a touchdown, I noticed on the graphic they would say touchdown on the bottom of the screen, and it was a particular color blue that was not navy. And it leads me to think they might have been using H-Town blue. Like on the Devin Singletary run, he scored, and then it said touchdown. It would show the graphic, and then his name would be in a little bit lighter shade blue. I was wondering if you guys noticed that.
I did not pay that much attention to the graphics, but look, we've made no secret about the fact that, for the people that we've heard from, and Jeremy maybe knows more sources on this than me, but I've talked to a few people, that kind of color is probably going to be involved in some way next year. If ESPN wanted to kind of use that as a way to kind of tease you into next year, so be it, but I didn't pay that much attention to it.
I noticed it. I think this is the way that ESPN does their graphics. Like, they kind of put the outline a little bit, like in different color. In fact, I just pulled up while you were talking there an old ESPN graphic of when the Texans played on ESPN in 2019, and you can still see that H-Town blue. So I don't think it was a hint to any sort of new logo or new color scheme. Now, they are going to add that H-Town blue. Drew Doherty in his mailbag the other day, who works with the Texans, gave a lot of clues the other day. He said they're going to have four uniforms. He said that they're not going to really change their color scheme or they're not going to change their logo, which is like, oh, they're going to keep Toro and not bring in the H, which I had heard, which kind of tells me that maybe they didn't get great reviews right. on the H. So that's cool. Like, I'm fine with Toro. But he did say they're having four new uniforms next year, and they're going to reveal it just before draft day. I don't think that it was a clue on the ESPN graphic, but I did notice it. It was a good catch.
But does that mean so the fourth color would be the light blue?
He didn't flat out say it, but they talked about a fourth. Okay. Like accent mm-hmm. color, yep. which they've all but said it's going to be that. And I think they're going to call it H-Town Blue. 713-780-ESPN. I like guys that care. It means a lot to me whenever, like, I'm a native Houstonian. It means a lot to me when people who represent Houston care. And we saw a lot of that on display on Saturday. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Look, it's also basketball season, right? Rockets with a big win over the weekend. Houston Cougars, number two in the nation, the only undefeated team left in all of college basketball. It's basketball season. You might be looking for a basketball goal. Your kids might be looking for a basketball goal. They might play middle school ball. They might play AAU, maybe high school ball. And you want to give them a goal, maybe for their birthday coming up. Pro Dunk makes the highest quality basketball goals you'll find. Tempered glass backboard, breakaway rim, stainless steel hardware, and it's also height adjustable, 5 feet to 10 feet. Also on that front, they've now come out with a lightning adjust. They have lightning adjust on their basketball goal called Thor. Lightning adjust and Thor, the first and only hoop available with drill-powered height adjustment. 5 feet to 10 feet, anywhere in between in under 10 seconds. And all you have to do is squeeze that trigger of that drill. It's patent pending, but lightning adjust is fantastic. Give your kids Thor so they can play hoops throughout the year. You can order everything online, too, including professional installation. Maybe you're not great. Maybe you're not a good handyman. Maybe your wife gives you grief for that. Well, just order the professional installation online. Yes, the pros at ProDunk professionally install your goal at the perfect height, perfectly straight. You don't install. Let the pros at ProDunk do all of the work for you. Give them a call now, 281-351-9822, and visit ProDunk.com. That's ProDunk.com.
ESPN 97.5.com Tiger Friendly Radio.
He would take a picture of Carol and take her head and put it on the body of a man in a diaper.
Welcome back, Houston. It's the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. Brian McDonald in for the vacationing Joe George, not here today. Houston Texans coming off a massive win, reaching the playoffs for the first time since 2019. And Joe's nowhere to be found.
Oh, he's plenty where's to be found.
Well, Blankers, thanks for selling the bit there. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. I like guys that care. I like guys that it means something to them. Some of my favorite players are guys that I can tell care, that have passion, that play hard. And I don't think that every professional does. We like to believe that, but I think there's pros that mail it in. I think there's pros that just kind of get by on their talent. Jadeveon Clowney's the guy I point to. I think Jadeveon Clowney's one of the most talented defensive ends we've seen in football in the last 15 years, but didn't have the work ethic to pair with the talent that would have made him elite. Like, you give Clowney, J.J. Watt's work ethic, Jadeveon Clowney's the best football player of our generation. He had the I don't know if you saw it, the little roster bonus sack the other day. Where he was 750.
Yeah. Yep.
I've never seen Jadeveon Clowney happier on the football field than when he collected that $750,000. Which, I mean, I get. I'd celebrate if I made $750,000 as well. But he just never had that passion.
Mm-mm.
D'Amico Ryan's after the game the other day, like, tearing up. Like, yeah. That's a guy I want representing the city of Houston. C.J. Stroud, as soon as like the clock hit, it wouldn't even the clock hitting zeros. It's whenever they got the fourth and one stop or drop, and he has a little fist pump, and he's like tearing up with Lisa Salters after the game. Like, I don't need you to cry, but if you have that passion, if you have that want-to, that desire, that care, and you're representing the Houston, like the city of Houston, which means a lot to me, like I'm loyal to the city, like I've lived here my entire life, the city means a lot to me, it means a great deal to me. I want my professional athletes in the city for it to matter to them. And we saw that with D'Amico, and we saw that with Stroud.
Now, look, Jeremy, I've worked with a lot of those guys. And nothing sucks the air out of your sails more than finding out that someone on your team doesn't really care and have the passion for the game, the love of the game, and the desire to play the game at a certain, you know, with a certain kind of ferocity that you would do, you would play if you were had the skill set. And Kelvin Cato's the story that I've always told before about a guy that just said, hey, this is the easiest way for me to make the most amount of money for me and my family, but I don't really love the game. And we were going to play a do-or-die win game with a chance to make the playoffs. And walking to the plane, I remember how it deflated me. I was like, wait, what? This is awesome. And there are guys like that. So you want the guys to care and not just pick up the check. And we have seen enough of them so that we know that sometimes that's disappointing. You don't have to worry about disappointment with your head coach. You don't have to worry about your quarterback. Lisa was watching the game and the end of the game and the post game with me, and she was like, you know what? I really like C.J. Stroud now because how humble he is, how passionate he was, and how he knew how much it meant to not just him. It was his teammates, the coach, but more so the city of Houston. So I thought that it was massive in terms of having guys, again, that we talk about at the forefront of this rebuild, be guys that probably care more than anybody else in that locker room.
3451 says, cheap shot on Cal. He was in his hotel room watching highlights. No, man. As soon as that game was over, they showered, they got dressed, they boarded the team charter, and they flew home to Houston. And once they landed in Houston, they got on the team bus and went to the team facility. Cal was probably already parked at the FBO and went straight home. The pick, the highlight or the video that you saw of Cal McNair that was tweeted out by the social media account
was
not Cal in a hotel room. That was Cal returning to Houston in the wee hours of Sunday morning, watching the game in his little man cave, or whatever we're calling that, wherever he had that little stuffed unicorn that was purple and pink, as he sat 100 feet away on his 40-inch TV. So he wasn't in his hotel room. They flew back. 713-780-ESPN. Here was D'Amico Ryans. He was asked the question after the game about that moment that we saw in the locker room, or near the locker room, kind of, you know, letting it all soak in. Here was D'Amico afterwards talking about that moment.
During that moment, I was just thankful, really thankful for this, to be in this position, right?
D'Amico got cut off there a little bit.
So.
Yeah, D'Amico. Anyway, he talked about how that moment was fantastic. It was great. It was really, really cool. But he cares, and mm-hmm. I like that. If you're representing the city of Houston, just, like, that's all the fans want. Like, just show that you care. And if you have a team that you're proud of and, like, they care and they play hard, you can accept defeat much easier. Like you're proud of them, right? Like you're proud of how they represented your city. They put the city on their chest and they played for you. You can see it with D'Amico. You can see it with CJ.
And you're not questioning them either, right? If it's the alternative, then you're looking at it going, were they really putting everything into it? Did they really, you know, could they have done that play better? Could they have done this play better? There's no doubt win, lose, or draw at the end of a ball game that you're going to question how much that D'Amico and CJ put into it. You're not going to question if they were prepared and they did everything that they possibly could. And the image that really was that image was when, like you said, when he's in that hallway and he just kind of props himself up against that wall and takes it all in for a second, takes that deep breath, and you can tell how deep in thought he was, regardless of what he wanted to reveal at the press conference or not. You're like, this dude was stressed out when he took this job. And I know so because I know people that know him well that said he obviously loved the opportunity, but he had to trust people and he had to build a staff and he had to do the things so that there weren't any distractions. To have it all come together like this and know that all that stress and all that hard work paid off, that was an awesome moment for anybody that loves the Houston Texans.
You're not saying that was unique though, right?
But no, but because of the situation he's coming into. There's a lot of times in organizations where you can go from coach to coach, but you know that the general manager's in place, or you know that there are people in the front office that are good football minds that you can trust.
I mean, he took the job.
Well, right, but this was the job that he obviously, from the standpoint of he had other jobs that he could have.
Exactly.
Right, but he took the job because he's played here, he loves the city, but he also knew coming in, taking the job, part of the negotiation was, I got to have the right to control things I need to control in terms of who's on my staff, who works with me. Casario was a big one. Getting over Easterby was another one. I know that because of the fact that Jack's kind of way of doing things, Jack had his people even on the business side. There was a lot of questions.
He was long gone, though.
But not all those people were.
No, I mean, D'Amico took the job, though. Like,
I understand what took the job.
I think that there's stress of every job that you take, so it's kind of like I'm trying to figure out exactly what you're saying. But I imagine if he's taking the Texans job, he feels that it's the best job for him and there's going to be lower stress with the job that he's accepting over all of the other options.
This was even before he accepted the job, when they were still talking about it, that he wanted the job, but before he took the job, he had to do a deep dive into everybody in that organization.
You think he'd be doing that for all of them, right?
Well, you should, but I'm just saying, this one maybe more than others because of the reputation of the people that were very, very recently there and involved in a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'm being naive here, but I would just think that he would take a deep dive on any huge decision. Like, taking a job, your first head coaching job, is a huge decision. I would imagine that he's, you know, turning over every stone whenever he's looking at all of these jobs. And he turned down the face-to-face with Denver. So, like, it shows you that he kind of really wanted this job. Like, he really wanted it, even though Aaron Wilson said he didn't. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. We'll get to some texters. Richard Vera on the other side as well. Also, some unsung heroes from Saturday's game. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. New year, new you, new hair if you want to. And that's because Doc Linville has a special going on right now. He's got the follicle count price down to $3.50. It's a massive savings for you. It's because he doesn't want to make a boatload of money on this procedure. He's told me face-to-face, I just want people in Houston to realize the procedure works. And it can be a game changer for those that choose to do it. So that's why he's doing this to start the new year, to get more people than ever interested in trying to get their hair back. The NeoGraft procedure, which he does better than anybody, in my opinion, it's a game changer because it's not the sprays and the creams and the foams that just mask the problem. It is getting your own hair back from places where genetically you're never going to lose it, like the sides and the back. And I sat down with Doc. I did the consultation with him. He explained the procedure and everything about it to me. And the one that really got me was 95 to 99% of those follicles that he's going to move, they're going to stay, they're going to grow, they're going to be with you for the long haul. And that was a difference maker for me. It was a game changer when I had the procedure done and I've seen the results. You can do the exact same thing. And because you listen to ESPN 97.5, you can start the process with that same consultation like I got, for the same price I paid for it, which was absolutely nothing. It's normally $150 for anybody off the street. You as a listener to us, get that deal for you too. Just go to 975hair.com. Go there and book your first appointment. Get the questions answered and figure out if it's right for you too. It was right for me and I couldn't be happier. They're the best in the business. If you want to get your hair back, go to 975hair.com.
ESPN 97.5 on YouTube. Dracula Flow.
I took two limitless pills to limit myself.
Welcome back, Houston. These guys missed you over the last break. It's the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Get into some unsung heroes in a moment. He's Blank, I'm Branham. Brian McDonald in for the vacationing Joe George. 3451-78 doesn't love football. How bad was his first half? I don't believe that. I think that Tunsil likes football. He was super happy running back to the locker room. Saw a video of it. I don't buy into the 78 doesn't love football conversation. I see that a lot. I think that's just his demeanor. Like, he's very chill. Like, he's very calm. Sometimes too much. And then the false starts are things that he gets criticized for a lot. Had two of them in the first half that were timely. One was on a third down and five that turned into a third and 10, didn't convert, settled for a punt. And then the second one was just ahead of the fourth and one, which D'Amico's about to go for. Again, D'Amico Ryan's kind of managing on vibes. It was weird how he decided to punt on the first decision and then was going to go for on the second decision. Didn't really add up, which D'Amico doesn't really add up. Like, D'Amico's not the I'm always going to hit on 16 at blackjack. It's going to be based on his vibes. It actually kind of helped the Texans, though, that there was because if they don't make it, if it's fourth and one, they don't make it. Colts get good field position. You know, who knows how it plays out from there. Now, you had the false start on 78. You had to punt. They pinned them deep. They go three and out. Texans score offensively.
Was that the one they got on the one?
No, it wasn't. It was actually a little bit. It might have been
nine.
I don't remember exactly because remember they had the they got it. They pinned them at the one,
right?
And then they had a first and 10, and there was immediately the offside.
Yep.
So I don't remember. It could have been that one. I kind of run together, but it might have been, might not have been. But anyways, they forced. You know, they had the false start on 78. So now you couldn't go for it, but you pin them deep. Three and out, you take over with good field position, and then you go score. So it really wasn't costly.
But at the same time, do you think that a guy, no matter how much you want to question how much he loves the game of football, this is a do-or-die situation. He's considered one of the top left tackles in the game. He's in a loud environment where a lot of times they're doing non-verbals because of the fact that it's gotten so loud. The momentum was starting to switch a little bit. Do you think he wanted to jump? and jump multiple times?
No, I don't think he wanted to jump.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking to the people that are, you know, possibly questioning him, that are listening. I just think that that's one of those deals where he's an easy target sometimes to go after. But in this case, I mean, look, he wasn't doing it purposely, and there's no one that's going to question his effort throughout the game.
No, I think that he likes football. I think his character is very chill. 713-780-ESPN, out to the HRMP listener line. Richard, you're in the Hive with the Bees. What's up, Richard?
Hello. I was wondering, if the Texans were to somehow win their home game, do you think there's any other road teams that might win the AFC to potentially give us the chance to have another home game? And if so, who would you like it to be? And please unblock Dick Willie. I love the show.
There you go.
I wonder who that was, Richard.
Yeah.
I wonder who that was. The Texans are the 4 seed. So if they win, they move on.
It has to be the AFC title game.
It would have to be the AFC title game because they don't.
They automatically would go to either Baltimore. They would go on the road.
They reseed in the division round. So, yeah, they would go on the road because even if they win, Dolphins a 6 seed win, Pittsburgh a 7 seed win. No, they could host. They could host in that situation. If Miami beats at Kansas City, Pittsburgh wins at Buffalo.
I'm thinking of the old format. Yeah, you're right.
Now with the 7 teams, like, there's 2 worst seeds that could win where you could host. So it's possible you could host. It would be Miami in that situation. You would have to win. Miami would have to beat Kansas City. Pittsburgh would have to be Buffalo, highly unlikely. And that's the only way you can host a division round game. Now, to Brian's point, you can host a conference championship game as long as it's not, you know, Buffalo, Baltimore, Kansas City.
Is it solely record, or like in sometimes seeding. In sports, seeding. They do, like, if you are a division winner, it trumps
seeding.
Records.
Seeding. It's all seeding. So, which, I mean, seeding does trump. I mean, the division title does trump record. Because that would be the 4 seed. Top wild card's the 5 seed. But it's all seeding once you get to the playoffs. So even if, like, Cleveland has a better record than the Texans.
Correct. Yeah, they're 11 wins. Better.
Texans have 10, and the Texans are hosting. So it's all about the seeding. So, yes, they potentially could.
It kind of falls apart with Pittsburgh having to win at Buffalo, at least for the divisional round.
I mean, Allen can give you a game. Allen tried to give the Dolphins this past game. Really he tried to give the Patriots a game
without,
in Week 17.
Without Deontay Hardy, I don't know how that game goes last night.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. So, yes, it's possible Texans could host all 3 games at NRG on their way to the Super Bowl. It's just very highly unlikely. There is a college football national championship at NRG. That'll be fun. We'll carry it on our air a little bit later. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line again. Vera, you're in the Hive with the Bees. What's up?
Hey, guys. I appreciate you letting me call in. Couple of points, and I think you did talk about how Nico Ryan took that big leap of faith when he came out to, you know, decided to agree to be the head coach for the Houston Texans. I would say a part of that same leap of faith also is on Nick Caserio. I mean, people always tend to gravitate towards coaches that they're familiar with, the systems that they are familiar with. Of course, with 2 failed coaching hires in both Cully and Lovie Smith, there wasn't too much, and there was sufficient pressure. But I would say it seems like they had a good combo because Caserio has now taken the back seat and is happy to do the analytical part, evaluate players, and then, you know, D'Amico gets the best out of them. The other point I did want to make, and this is not directly related to the Texans, but from the game, is that young kid, Tyler Goodson from the Colts. He's a fine young man. I mean, you know, he did not shirk when media came and asked him about the drop catch. He accepted, and I think, I wish that kid well. I mean, just not against us. But I did feel for that kid. Just wanted to kind of get that over to you guys. Thanks, guys. I appreciate you letting me.
Thanks for the call, Vera. Look, I mean, you have to look. You're a Texans fan first and foremost. You're happy the way the play turned out. It sucks to be that kid that wasn't on a roster early on. He made the team. He only had like 43 snaps, and then suddenly he was thrust into a position where he could make a big play, and it didn't happen, and that sucks. But, you know, you're never going to say you want a do-over. I mean, yeah, you wish the best for him. I know in situations like that in the past, and he made it very clear he wants to be back. That's one of those deals with the veterans in the locker room and the way that personnel decisions are made. Sometimes the front office believes that it's best for both parties, so that doesn't linger longer, that you move on. You hope he gets another shot, whether it be there or somewhere else.
I couldn't care less.
That's shocking.
I'll be the jerk. I've never heard of Tyler Goodson. If I never hear from him again, I would not care. This is what happens whenever you employ offensive football players that went to Iowa. Like, how do you have a football player on your team that went to Iowa?
Asterisk, unless they're a tight end.
Unless they're a tight end. Great point. You do not have players, offensive players, unless they're tight end, that come from Iowa. Whenever you do, bad things happen. Who was Lance's friend? What's the GM? I'm blanking on his name.
Chris Ballard.
This is on Chris Ballard. We just talked about players or people to blame for that 4th-and-1 drop, bad throw. The first one is Gardner Minshew. The second one isn't Tyler Goodson. He's third. The second one is with Chris Ballard for having an offensive player that's not a tight end that came from Iowa. Who in their right mind employs an Iowa, not tight end, offensive football player? That's on Ballard.
Don't you want to include offensive linemen, too, on the offensive side of Iowa?
Yeah, let's count them, too. Skill position guys that are not tight ends.
Yeah.
Skill position guys that are not tight ends. They can block. They can block with the best of them. They just don't score points. And where do you get points from? Skill position guys, not named tight end. So that's on him. That's on the GM. That's on Minshew. That's not on Tyler Goodson. But if I never hear from Tyler Goodson again, I'm not going to care.
Look, I think based on the conversation last segment too, on Vera's first point, you knew that there was going to be a feeling out process. You knew whether it was prior to or right after the hire was made, there was going to be some serious discussions internally about who was going to have the loudest voice in the room and what was the power, the hierarchy going to be like going forward. To both guys' credit, they found a way to find balance almost immediately, and they've worked in lockstep the entire season. They're quick to give each other credit. It's not like O'Brien and Rick Smith where it seemed like it was competitive to a fault and a power struggle. And both guys deserve a lot of credit for just that aspect of it and then turning that into how it relates to day-to-day football operations and personnel decisions, because they've hit a whole lot more than they've missed, and they've seemed to work in unison the entire season.
I saw the love affair very early, and people are like, oh, you're seeing things. You're crazy. You're delusional. No, they work well together. They work well together. And credit to Caserio, because, like, Vera's right. Like, these aren't two schemes that are natural fits. And I think Casario's done a good job of kind of understanding who fits D'Amico's scheme, style, system, and it's been a good marriage so far. Give me one unsung player from Saturday's game.
Well, I mean, right off the top, I would say Beck, just because of the fact that you didn't know if he was going to play. He got a touchdown. You know, he was doing his job. He got a penalty, too, early on a holding call. But overall, there was a guy that was dinged up, but we saw throughout the season little glimpses of a guy that in the offense, but more so even on special teams, dude was, you know, putting it all out there. And to have him come up with a big touchdown in the biggest game of the year, I'll start there.
Yeah, I like that call, although it's hard to give him too much credit for that touchdown. Like,
just a play that was perfectly called.
Yeah, he was just kind of the guy there.
Uncovered by 10 yards. Like, if he drops that, it's one of the worst drops in NFL history. So, like, credit that he caught it. Credit that he was there. Credit he was a warm body that was on the receiving end. But it wasn't, like, a difficult play. But a good call, because, I mean, he was very active in the running game, things like that. For me, I'm going with the Aussie. Give me Cam Johnston. How good was Cam Johnston on Saturday? He's sitting 62-yard bombs, and it looked to me, it was hard for me to tell, was he talking trash? Was he talking a little smack to the
Colt
guy?
He definitely got excited a few points,
I think he was talking a little smack. He pinned him inside the one. He had four inside the 20. He takes the intentional safety, although he should have ran to the big side of the field. That way he took the extra second
off.
But then he kicks the final free kick on the safety. Great decision, D'Amico Ryans. Cam Johnston was outstanding on Saturday night.
No doubt about it. I mean, look, the fact that he has that little extra in him that he wants to talk smack, because they were talking smack. There was a lot of, you see at this time of the year, I mean, in almost every game you watch, there's a lot of extra going on after the whistle. The fact that you don't expect it out of your punter, but the bottom line was he did his job. I mean, pinning him multiple times the way he did. The dude's had a massive leg. There were questions when the Texans moved on from the punter that's now with the Cowboys.
Anger.
Who's had a good year, too. But he's been everything and more you could have asked for from the punting position. He stepped up big in a big game.
Yeah, big game from Cam Johnston, the punter. Who are your unsung heroes? 713-780-3776. Also, when we come back, game balls. We have to get game balls to those around the league who had big performances over the weekend. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, home of the Norwegian Blue.
This parrot is no more. Yes, cease to be.
Nobody does it better than Regent Seven Seas Cruises. Enjoy all-inclusive, unrivaled luxury with unlimited shore excursions, indulgent cuisine, personalized service, and more aboard spacious all-suite ships. Visit rssc.com to experience the unrivaled.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.